the guy who drives it through.
Hit the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Men's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic!
I remember it to this day. It was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though. Still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection! And it goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park! Twisting! Shouting! Shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight myself and Jay are joined by Joe McKelvey. We may be joined by Buster at some stage in the evening. He's currently poolside in Las Vegas. Clearly has nothing better to do, so did agree to come on, but we've not heard from him yet, so we'll wait and see. How are we, guys?
Aye, not bad. Not as good as it would be if I was poolside in Vegas, but aye, not too shabby.
It's a nice day in Russia today, so I'm as good as I could be in Vegas.
Wish you Vegas. Well, a disappointing week was finished off with a disappointing defeat against St Johnstone on Saturday, Jay. We just didn't, our energy levels were poor throughout. It was a flat game in the first half. We managed to get our noses in front. And then I was unaware of the fact that St Johnstone, on all three occasions last season, came back from a goal behind to beat us 2-1. And history yet again repeated itself on Saturday.
Yeah, overall, it was pretty poor, I think, particularly as the home team. You're right, first half was a bit of a damp squib, I don't think. You know, it certainly wasn't a 45 minutes of football that will live long in the memory. It was quite dull. There wasn't a great deal happening. Neither side, I think, particularly, looked on top. Second half, yep, started a wee bit brighter, got the goal. I thought it was a decent enough goal. It wasn't quite, you know, the goals we scored at Rugby Park, but it was a great ball across for Tate. Nice finish for Cadden. Great to see him in that position in the first place. Of course, that was good. But I think in terms of the game overall, sorry, I just get completely put off by mad noises in the background there.
Yeah, it appears that Buster has joined us from Las Vegas.
Hello.
How's Vegas?
It's good, it's really warm to be honest with you. I'm sitting here half pink, I think. I missed your call, so I thought I'd maybe just pop in and say hi. I don't think there's any point in me participating because my signal will probably come and go.
Oh, to be fair, you have just wasted the first 2 minutes of the podcast. But
oh, no, it's fine. I'll crack on. I think after Cadden scored, I think we could have went 2-0 up. McDonald missed that a half decent chance. But yeah, I think it was really poor after that. I think both goals completely avoidable. The first one, Joe Chalmers is in another planet, not paying attention, no concentration whatsoever. St Johnstone take the quick throw, Hennigan's beaten far too easily. And then when the shot comes in, although it's obviously in a dangerous position, you know, that's the kind of position where you talk about a goalkeeper not being beaten at his front post, never mind the ball going straight through him. So I thought Samson was suspect for that. And then, of course, the second goal was just absolutely criminal from your goalkeeper. Not only has he spilled the shot, he's actually actively moved to the right-hand side. If he kept going in the direction he was travelling in, he could maybe have, you know, got a block on it, maybe made himself big. Instead, he's moved to the right. I don't know whether he was thinking he was going to catch the ball and quickly get it out to Tate or whoever. But he's, you know, he's palmed the ball out or he's made a mess of it, moved to the right, and then ended up flapping about like an idiot while McLean puts it in an empty net. And you're really not going to get you know, a worse mistake from a goalkeeper than that. So it's one of those games where, you know, when McDonald misses that chance in particular, it could have been so different, but I don't think we deserved anything, because at the end of the day, although Danny Swanson's been in form and St Johnson certainly did look decent, we completely shot ourselves in the foot.
Joe, individual errors, I think it's fair to say, cost us on Saturday. My concern is there may be a few individuals on that side just now that don't deserve to be there. We've bought, or we believe to have bought, pretty well over the course of the summer. The goalkeeping issue is one that is very interesting. We seem to have brought in, or we have got, two first choice, or previous first choice Premier League goalkeepers. Got to now consider giving Dean Brilley's chance, given that Samson, albeit did play fairly well at points in the League Cup game at Celtic Park, he conceded 5, culpable for both the goals on Saturday. It's a hard one for the manager, but I think it's maybe time to at least try out Dean Brill and see what he's got to offer.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, I was, as Jay said, I was disappointed in Samson for both the goals at the weekend. And the only thing that you might say in Samson's favour is that it might be wrong to promote a sort of one strike, get out culture if you are claiming that the only bad game that he had was at the weekend against St Johnston. But for me, it runs a bit deeper than that. His inability to catch the ball has been evident in the 4 or 5 games I've seen of him so far this season. He got heralded for a great double save against Celtic last week, but both those Celtic attacks stemmed from the fact that he couldn't hold routine shots and put us under pressure. But you would say, in the summer, we all expected Samson to sign a new deal and we all expected him to be number one, but many of us advocated a younger, less experienced backup keeper to spend the budget elsewhere in the team. But if we have signed Dean Brill, then, and Samson's been culpable as he is, then for me it's the time for him to come into the team at the weekend, no doubt. I mean, I think Dean Brill, when he signed for us as a second choice goalkeeper, there must have been something in it for him. Mark McGee must have said that if there's a loss of form of Samson, then he'll get his chance. So personally, I would put him in, but thinking of it from Mark McGee's perspective, I would be surprised not to see Samson start on Saturday.
Jay, the other thing for me is that you could almost feel the atmosphere building around Samson. The nervousness was transcending into the crowd, and also the St Johnston supporters were kind of, even at 1-1, were trying to distract him at goal kicks. I know, typical football fan stuff, but I think they sensed the goalkeeper was nervous, and that can also then rub off in your back four and the rest of the team, of course. So there's an issue there. If the guys in front of him don't have confidence in his ability, and he is liable to mistakes, as we've already pointed out, I know he's only had one particularly poor game, but he's only had 5 games. So how many times over the course of the season is he going to be costing his goals or putting us under pressure in that way? That's why I would like to see Brill in at an early juncture in the season. Then, if Brill comes in and is a disaster, then we've got maybe more of a problem in our hands. But I just don't think that we can be sticking with someone that on Saturday let us down badly and arguably cost us a share of the spoils.
Oh yeah, I mean, when you're talking about the, first and foremost, the idea of, you know, Brill coming in for Saturday's game, I think that I can see where Joe's coming from. I do understand that it's quite a big call to make, and you could put forward the argument that Samson hasn't made enough mistakes, but by the same token, you need to make these decisions. Samson is a goalkeeper who I think most Motherwell fans raised eyebrows at when we signed him in the first place, partly because we already had Ripley and Twardzig at the time, but also I think most Motherwell fans or SPL fans at large don't particularly rate Craig Samson. I know that when we played Kilmarnock away in the first day of the season, all the Kelly boys that we met before it were adamant that we had one of the worst goalkeepers in the SPL. A lot was mentioned about his inability to actually hold on to shots and his tendency to palm the ball out into people's paths and things like that. So it's certainly no surprise. And I think that when you're talking about Saturday, yes, I understand that it's a big call to say you cost us that game on Saturday, so you're dropped. But by the same token, if we do have a goalkeeper that is going to cost us points, then you can't run the risk of just sticking by him game after game. Now, I'm not going to get too, you know, I don't want to get too negative and sort of, you know, tear it to shreds or anything. But at the end of the day, if you play in a position such as a goalkeeper and you make a mistake that costs your team the game, then you should be prepared to be dropped for the next game. I think that if we'd brought in a young goalkeeper or an unknown goalkeeper for a backup, and Samson was explicitly told you are going to be number one for this season, then I could completely understand with the idea that we persist with him. But we don't. We have two what you would effectively call SPL level goalkeepers who are presumably on first team goalkeeper wages. The whole idea, I presume, is for them to be competing for the number one spot. So the idea that, you know, we wouldn't bring Brill in after Samson's display on Saturday, I find very, very negative, because at the end of the day, we've been told quite a number of occasions that we can't afford to fill certain positions, we can't afford you know, to spend any more money on the team because we've already used up our budget. Well, part of that budget is paying for two SPL goalkeepers. So unless Brill comes in on Saturday, then it says to me that it is a bit of a wasted wage, because if you're not going to bring in Dean Brill to replace Craig Samson when Craig Samson costs you a game of football, then why is he there?
Can I just say that I also actually agree with that?
I'm really sorry, because I wasn't 100% sure if you were still here, so I've not been involved in you at all.
I'm actually going to go because, as I say, my connection's coming and going as well, but I think that's 100% right. If Dean Brill is there, he's picking up a semi-decent wage, he should be given a chance as well. The mistakes have been made, you know, and Samson's had this chance, so let's give Dean a chance and see if in fact he is, bro. Hey! Right, I'm away, I think he's alright.
Thanks for that.
See you later, guys.
Enjoy.
Right, guys, I think that's us for this week. We'll see you later, alright? The other individual, and I think we're normally fairly balanced and reasonable on individual performances on here, but again, another standout was Joe Chalmers on Saturday, who he does come under the microscope for a lot of criticism at times, and I think quite a lot of it's deserved, going on his latest performance against St Johnstone. Joe, he just doesn't look like a footballer. His composure's poor, his positional sense is poor. Like, as Jay has already alluded to for Swanson's goal, it was just absolutely daydreaming. Yes, I think that Ben Hennigan perhaps shouldn't have dived in the way he did, but I wouldn't say he was the least culpable out of the three of them for that goal. That's a position that there's issues with as well. Stephen Hamill succumbed to an injury. Hopefully he will be back in the fold in the next couple of weeks, but if Stephen Hamill's going to suffer from the same injury problems he's had in the last couple of years, we're looking at a real problem area of the park.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was an area that we really should have addressed in the summer, personally. I do think we have recruited fairly well over the summer, but there's one area that I think was kind of amiss. The thing is, though, if you're signing Hamill in a new deal and you can't get Chalmers off the wage bill, then you are looking at kind of having three left backs, were we, to replace him. But I mean, it's the thing, Hamill obviously is getting more injury prone now, and he's perhaps not the influence he once was on the team as a result of this. But I mean, we've tried with Zane Francis Angle, with Anthony Straker, with Joe Chalmers now to get guys in who could be potential successors to Hamill, but yet, for all the criticism Hamill seems to get from some sections of our support these days, totally unmerited in my book, I'd just like to put on record, we are all pining for Hamill to be back in the team as soon as he misses one game. Personally, I was discussing the first goal with you earlier on, today, and I was just saying when I watched the highlights back, when you see St Johnston get the throw-in and how sort of lackadaisical Chalmers is sauntering back, and they just St Johnston throw the ball right into the left back area, and that's where it comes from. It just on Saturday, I'm trying to be not to be too harsh on the guy here, but he looked a bit like someone that either didn't want to be there, didn't think he should be there, didn't know what he was doing. I just felt like having him at left back kind of offered as little. I mean, I would, to be honest, if Hamill's out injured much longer, I would perhaps look at, for example, playing Tate as a left back and maybe looking to alternative options at right back, because I just can't see how we can continue to play him. It's been bizarre how he's almost been our 12th player as well, in the likes of the fact that when Lasley was out, he played in midfield. When McHugh was out, he played in midfield. When Lasley's out, when Hamill's out, he comes in for him. I just can't fathom it, because unfortunately, I don't want to be too disparaging the guy, because I'm sure he goes out and gives his all, but he just doesn't seem to look short-term or long-term capable in any of those positions. So that was a real area of concern for me the weekend, I must say.
Can I just say, though, as much as I can't find fault in anything that you have said in terms of Joe Chalmers, I think you know, we're all Motherwell fans, we would love him to prove us wrong. I don't think that he's particularly cut out. I don't think he's shown enough, at least, to show that he's cut out to play at this level. And, you know, I share the frustration that, yes, it would Stevie Hamill, sort of negative comments he gets recently. I think he's far and away, the number one choice at left back. The only thing I would say, the only thing I just want to pick up on, Sparrow, when you mentioned that, when you obviously asked Joe about it, you said, you know, the other standout poor performance. I'm not sure if it was. I think that he was at fault for the first goal. I think that we all were expecting him to be poor, so you perhaps pick up on it more often than others. But I don't think he was the only standout poor performance. I think Lasley had the worst game he's had for us for quite some time. I thought both Ainsworth and Johnson were, you know, apart from the odd flash, practically non-existent. In fact, Marvin Johnson, if he plays like that in the next couple of weeks, will be going nowhere.
Well,
so that'll probably
that,
quite
though.
Fun. Wait a minute.
Sorry.
Scott McDonald as well. Scott McDonald, to me at the moment, looks like a player who knows that he's not under threat for his position. Whether that'll change when Louis Moat comes back or not, I'm not sure. I mean, the actual punch into the back of the net from Scott McDonald was one of the most ridiculous things I've seen in a football park in quite some time, and that's one of our more experienced players. So as much as I agree that Joe Chalmers is poor and was poor, and probably will continue to be poor, I think it's important to remember that there were a number of players on Saturday who didn't cut it and who put in performances that weren't what you would expect. And Joe Chalmers, to me, was one of those, but he certainly wasn't, you know, somehow far out in front of you know, a lot of other players.
Can I just pick up a little bit on what you said there regarding McDonald, Johnson and Ainsworth? I think the thing that maybe goes against Joe Chalmers is the fact that he's playing in positions where if he does one bit of sort of good play, it's going to be largely unnoticed. Whereas if you look at the highlights on Saturday, I agree with you that Johnson had a very poor game on the whole, but if you'd watched the 5-minute highlights that were in Sports Scene last night or whatever, as a neutral or someone just watching it, you would have come away thinking, oh, that Johnson looked a threat for Motherwell yesterday.
Well, that's exactly.
He's probably off.
That's exactly and where I was going to come in. Sorry, just for 2 seconds. I don't know whether if you've got scouts there that are really going to pay much attention, but maybe if there was a few teams that had Johnson at number 2 or number 3 in their list, these highlights looked like they were very much packaged to almost show off Johnson's talents, which isn't a bad thing if it's going to net as a significant transfer fee, but I thought it was a wee bit skewed. In fact, I thought the highlights as a whole, we've complained sometimes that they don't show very many of our good points, or they don't show much of a balance in the game. I thought they were actually quite skewed towards us on Saturday, almost as if the complaints from the club, because you know Alan Burrows has been very vocal in social media about the kind of portrayal of Motherwell in these highlight packages, that maybe they've actually taken notice and went completely the opposite way.
Just to pick up what Joe was saying there, I mean, I think that's completely right in terms of the position he plays. I mean, when you look at, you know, if you were to rhyme off the top of your head the kind of players that were Boo Boy targets, Sean Fagan, Mark Fitzpatrick, even Derek Adams, although he was a striker at Ross County, he certainly wasn't employed in that position at Fir Park. You know, these are guys who were pretty much tasked with going out and doing the dirty work, you know, tackle somebody, get the ball and pass it to someone else. So there's a lot of truth in that. It's easier to, you know, if Marvin Johnson does something, you know, 9 times out of 10 does something terrible and gives the ball away in the middle of the park, but then once, you know, puts in a good ball and somebody scores from it, then it's deemed that he's had a reasonable game because he got an assist. But the same token, if Joe Chalmers, you know, makes 9 half-decent passes but makes a mistake that costs us a goal, then, you know, the daggers are out. So I completely agree with that. That's not to take anything away from the underlying point that I don't think he's good enough. You know, there's no getting away from that. But I think there does, you know, it is sort of traditional Motherwell kind of mentality to kind of victimise these players when, to me, just purely actually for that punch into the back of the net, Craig Sampson will sit and talk about how poor he was. But let's be honest, you know, he didn't mean to palm it out. It was just because he's not particularly good. Scott McDonald punching the ball into the back of the net was absolutely farcical for an experienced player, international. You know, he's played Champions League. He's one of the players that you'd imagine a lot of the young players look up to. That was just absolute nonsense. And that's kind of been, I've seen it mentioned a few times, but it's been kind of swept under the carpet, or you know, it's not getting as much airtime, if you like, or you know, posts on Steelman Online and things like that, because people are focusing on what you would say is the more important things, like Samson's performance at the goals. But I'm sorry, if that is the Scott McDonald attitude, he's always been quite petulant and quite moany, but if we've reached the stage now where a ball into the box, if he's not going to get it, or he's a bit pissed off, he's not scoring goals or getting service, he's just going to lamp it into the back of the net with his hand, then I can't wait for Louis Moult to get back so we can get him on the bench.
What I was going to come in and say earlier
was, when I was saying about Johnson, I was also going to have a point of McDonald again. Largely agree with you that him punching the ball into the net was totally unacceptable and petulant and bizarre, to be honest. At the weekend, I didn't celebrate the goal, as you remember, because I thought there's no way a guy that's 5'8" leapt to that height. But look, in McDonald's defence, he's played an intelligent pass to create every one of our 3 league goals so far this season. So as much as he's maybe not had 2 amazing games or whatever, he has certainly in both games made a telling contribution for us, albeit Saturday's was worthless in the end because we didn't come away with anything. But he is certainly in there creating for us.
I get slightly annoyed as well that I think it was Hennigan that was coming in at the back post. There was still a possibility that he might actually make contact with that ball. So for McDonald to do that, it almost kind of constitutes something that he should be warned for, or potentially docked a few quid out his appearance fee, because that's just ridiculous.
Well, that's it. I mean, imagine, you know, at the game, I remember there was more of a kind of a weird sort of surprise, a sort of, you know, I don't really remember MD getting too, you know, harsh on McDonald or getting on his back for it. There was more just a kind of a disbelieving surprise that he'd punched it when there didn't really seem any reason for it. But, you know, by the same token, imagine Joe Chalmers had been in that position and done the same. He would have been absolutely crucified. It's just, I don't understand that at all. As you said, there was still, it shows a complete lack of, at the very best, it shows a complete lack of awareness that there is still, you know, an attack going on around him. And at the very least, or the very worst, it shows a complete lack of caring that there's an attack going around about him, because Hennigan's already shown himself to be pretty decent in the air. If McDonald doesn't stick his hand out there, then there's no telling. We could have went, you know, we could have got a goal out of it, and we don't get the chance for, you know, just a completely bizarre decision from a very experienced football player.
One thing I will say is, I remember a few seasons ago, on the opening day of the season, Jamie Murphy punched the ball into the back of the net at Perth, and everyone just laughed. And we drew that day. I don't know if it was maybe because we got something for the game that day, and Saturday we didn't. But when Jamie Murphy did it, I can't recall even being kind of like substantially talked about, as if it was Murphy in the right, it was Murphy in the wrong. It was just like, oh, the cross came in and Murphy punched it into the net. I think McDonald's been given a bit more airtime, maybe because people have thought in the summer he wanted away to Hibs, and then he wanted away to Sydney, and maybe think he's been playing quite petulantly. Certainly in the East Stirling game, it looked like he had a kind of demeanour of it's everybody's fault but mine when everything went wrong. So I don't know. I think maybe in light of those kind of events, people are perhaps giving it more airtime than it merits, maybe than it doesn't, but certainly in comparison to when Jamie Murphy did it, people just kind of seem to brush that off.
I just think it's possibly on the back of a disappointing week. We just wanted to see, particularly after the performance again at Celtic Park, we just wanted to see something a bit better, and even just a team that was high energy and high pressing, first home game of the season. It was just a disappointing day, really. I attend a disappointing week. Talking just about one more individual, we've talked about Marvin Johnson and the potential of him leaving. Someone that was maybe earmarked to replace Johnson would have been Dom Thomas, who got another cameo appearance on Saturday. And again, Jay, I don't know how many chances he's going to get. Look, he does get the odd chance from the start in smaller games. For instance, the League Cup game against East Stirling, he got his start and he really failed to make a mark in that game. Again, he's maybe been brought on to change the game and change the energy levels, but for me, just seems to flatter to deceive. I was very excited about Thomas up to about 18 months ago, and time after time, it just fails to impress, unfortunately.
I think it's very difficult to judge on these kind of performances. I think that, you know, you're expecting a young lad to come off the bench and change a game, and I think that's very difficult to do. That's not to, you know, say that particularly when he started that League Cup game against East Stirling, I thought he was very, very disappointing, and that was the kind of game that, you know, he should have been going out and really, really making a, you know, a big show and really putting himself forward for, you know, more opportunities this season. But I think just the way, you know, we're sitting talking about how disappointing and lacklustre the performance was, I think it's a lot more difficult than perhaps we tend to think. You know, throwing in a young guy into that kind of performance and expecting him to do anything. I mean, I can't remember off the top of my head when Dom Thomas came on, so maybe you can tell me.
Nope.
Well, I'm thinking because, like, I mean, I genuinely can't remember the order of the substitutions on Saturday, but our biggest problem on Saturday was that we completely lost the midfield battle. We struggled to get any hold on midfield, and that just allowed St Johnson to, you know, grab the game by the scruff of the neck and basically control things from the middle. We then took off Cadden and decided to throw on Blythe, I think it was, and went 4-4-2, which meant that any chance we had of battling in the midfield with a midfield three, we completely lost by going to a midfield two. I mean, Tommy Wright must have been utterly delighted when we went to a 4-4-2, because we couldn't win the midfield with a midfield three. We had two, we had absolutely no chance, and that effectively killed the game. Now, I can't remember if Thomas came on before or after that, but
it was after. Johnson only played 14 minutes, 76 he came on for Ainsworth.
Right, so if Thomas came on with 15 minutes to go in a game that not only we were trailing, we'd practically sacrificed the midfield and had absolutely no chance of getting back into, then I'm not going to read too much into his performance. That is not to say that, you're right, I mean, in terms of, you know, a more long-term view of it, you know, particularly that start against East Stirling, he needs to do a lot more, because this is the kind of season where if you get to the end of this season and he still hasn't put himself forward as a potential first-team starter, then you've really got to start looking at moving him on before he becomes, you know, like a Bob McHugh figure, just sort of making cameos from the bench. But I certainly wouldn't read too much into his performance on Saturday. I think it would be a wee bit harsh to judge him not just, you know, the fact that he's came on when we've been trailing and not playing particularly well, but I just don't think that we were tactically set out at that point to go on and really do anything in the game. I think as soon as McGee went to 4-4-2, we effectively sacrificed the game because we had absolutely no chance of winning the midfield. And I think to put too much judgment on a young guy who comes on with 15 minutes to go in that kind of circumstance, I think would be a wee bit too far.
So after a week that contained two defeats, at least we have the positive that we can look forward to a trip to Ibrox on Saturday. we need like a hole in the head just now. Joe, it's not one that I can particularly look forward to 5 or 6 days before the kickoff. Maybe a wee bit of transfer news or just generally a bit of team news might kind of cheer me up a wee bit before then, but there's no doubt that travelling to Ibrox for, I think, one of the very few 3 p.m. kickoffs on a Saturday afternoon, very likely to be a full house, it's a huge task.
Undoubtedly, yeah, I'm not too optimistic going into it myself. When Rangers played us at Fir Park in the first game of the season in the League Cup, the first half I thought we countered them very well. We kind of seemed to have a decent enough game plan where we sat in, and when the opportunities allowed, we seemed to go out and catch them in the break 2 or 3 times. Should maybe have gone into the break a couple of goals up. And I do still think Rangers at home will play with their full-backs high up, and there will be areas that will be exposed. But to be honest, I do see it as being a bit of a tall order for us to go and get anything from the weekend. Our league record at Ibrox is absolutely dreadful, as we're all aware. Rangers, I believe, are signing a striker from Preston for $1.5 million, Joe Garner, tomorrow, I believe, and they're adding Senderos as well, so they've got strength and depth. And as much as their first two performances in the league haven't been earth-shattering, obviously drawing with Partick Thistle and Dundee, I would be very surprised to see us go there and get anything. Had we maybe gone to Celtic Park and maybe even lost 1-0 or 2-1 and put a spirited performance in, but to go to Celtic Park and get completely outclassed and outfought, to then follow up with a defeat to St Johnstone at home at the weekend, if we are ever going to go to Ibrox and get anything in the league, I don't think it will be on the back of two results of those magnitude. I can't see it on Saturday, to be honest. I'm fairly pessimistic about the game myself.
Jay, another factor, barely significant at this point. I was looking at one of the papers yesterday and actually questioning why they even bother to print the league tables after two games into the season, but they will go into the game top of the league. As Joe pointed out, the draw against Hamilton, the win against Dundee, perhaps not the most convincing of performances, but they seem to be continuing to strengthen their squad. We're in the back of two disappointing defeats. It's kind of a hard one to find too many positives about, but we've already alluded to it. The transfer window will shut in a few weeks' time. There may be a few guys looking to impress. There almost certainly is a few guys looking to impress. So what better time to do it than in front of 50-odd thousand people?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't see the point in getting too negative. I understand that it's a big ask. Of course it is. It's always a difficult place to go. And, you know, you need a few things to... First and foremost, you know, the Celtic game during the week, we are kind of suggested that we have some players who, you know, whether they're just not used to it yet or what, you know, in terms of new signings and things like that. You know, we kind of bottled it at Celtic Park. We didn't really know what we were doing. How much of that was down to tactics and things, you know, that you could debate. But, you know, that concerns me, the idea that we could go to Ibrox on Saturday and possibly bottle it. But if we don't, then I don't, you know, I understand why it's, you know, the automatic response to maybe get quite negative. But firstly, you know, Joe points out the whole idea of, you know, them being at home and the way that Rangers will line up. Everybody knows that they push their fullbacks right up. And if you're able to combat that tactically, whether it is playing your own game to the extent that it keeps them silent, or whether you can even get in behind them, then there's certainly space there to be exploited. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Rangers, from what I've seen, are pish. I mean, they're not great. I mean, I mean pish in, you know, in terms of Rangers. In terms of the SPL, yes, they'll be a top six side. I've not seen Hearts or Aberdeen yet, so I can't compare them. But Rangers will be nowhere near the title this year, in my opinion. They're a mediocre side. They scraped a draw against the Aggies. They were pretty poor at Dens Park, you know, the lunchtime kickoff on Saturday. So let's not pretend that this is some sort of fantastic Rangers side. They're mediocre at best. I've said for quite a while that I actually expect Warburton to underestimate the SPL somewhat in terms of the quality. So, you know, if you go there with no fear, and you go there and you look to take advantage, and you have maybe a wee bit of luck in terms of, you know, exploiting the space behind the fullbacks, then there's no reason we can't go to Ibrox and score. Whether we actually, you know, it's that Celtic game that sticks out in my mind. Tactically, we were very, very poor. The way we lined up, the way we set out was poor. It was, you know, negative, and it cost us in that side of the game. And I think the players' mentality, we did kind of bottle it slightly. So if that's a repeat on Saturday, then yes, we will get beat. But if we can sort out the mentality and we can go with a game plan, then I don't see why we can't get at least a point. If Hamilton Accies can go to Ibrox and get a point, then Motherwell can go to Ibrox and get a point. And it's as simple as that, because Rangers aren't great. They aren't, you know, the old club that they replaced, you know, that used to turn up with some good players. They're not that, you know, they're a brand new team. They've got, yeah, Joey Barton's here for his retirement and things like that, but if you go and you actually have the right mentality, then there's no reason you can't get a result. You know, Accies have shown us that. And if, you know, are we seriously saying that Hamilton Accies, who are one of the favourites for relegation this year, can go to Ibrox and get a point, but we should just accept that we're not going to get it? No, I don't buy that for a second. Have my worries or my concerns about how McGill approached the game. I have my concerns in terms of certain players' bottle going and things like that. But if we can get both of those things right, then we can go to Ibrox and get at least a point.
A wee bit of transfer news today. Lou Lang departing the club on a 5-month loan deal to Notts County. Joe, Lang's come in under Ian Barraclough. Injuries have really hampered them, and under Mark McGee's time at Fir Park. It seems like a move that will be beneficial. I don't know whether the end goal is for Lang to eventually move on, and might be the case that Mark McGee doesn't rate him, but I'm sure the next 5 months will tell him a lot about his future at the club and whether he will remain about. The only kind of concern I've got is that we do look a wee bit short now. Should it be the case that when a defender picks up an injury, We've also seen Louis Lang being deployed as a right back in a few occasions where he did actually all right after a ropey start last season. I'm not sure how you feel about this one, to be honest. They kind of throughout the pre-season, he never really seemed to be in the picture, though.
Yeah, it's a strange one. How to feel about it? I mean, I think Richard Tate is going to be our number one right back, but there was sort of a spell of a month or so last season where Lang was kind of the first choice fullback there before he got injured against Hamilton Accies, and then we brought Josh Law back in. Like, at that point in time, McGee seemed to rate him. He certainly rated him above Josh Law anyway at that point in time. And Lang's a player that when he first came in, he obviously got sent off in his debut, which for last man tackle, which wasn't a great start, but when he came in, I don't know if it was because he was a breath of fresh air from Mark O'Brien's constant Route 1 football, who'd been playing in beside McManus before then, but I was really refreshed by him when he first came in. I thought for a centre-back, he was really good in the ball. He did seem at times as if there was an error in him, but I felt like that season, he's a record with him in the team that season compared to without. I mean, the team that season was staggering. I looked at it not too long ago when there was sort of a debate in Steelman online about whether if we were keeping one of him and Kennedy, who would it be? For me, I would have much sooner seen Kennedy go out and loan than Lang. I mean, I think Kennedy's a decent stopper. He's decent at defending the basics. But like Lang, I do think he has a mistake in him as well. Whereas I think if you take that they're both defenders with a mistake in them, I think the fact that Lang's slightly more versatile, looks more at home when he plays at full-back than Kennedy does, has been possibly touted as a midfielder at times, although I've not seen that personally. He's technically better on the ball. I would have personally much preferred to see Kennedy go out and loan in this to keep Lang. One thing I'll say about the move for Lang is, I mean, I don't think it's one of those ones that I don't think now it seems as if there's a great future for him at Motherwell. When he comes back from his initial loan period anyway, he'll have 6 months left to go in his contract. And I mean, in terms for Motherwell, if you look at it, that if he goes away to Notts County and plays every week, he's going to get an appetite for playing every week and feel like he's enjoying his football again and whatever. And if he comes back in January, Mark McGee will maybe try and keep him for the rest of the season, and Lang would maybe say, well, if I'm coming back here to sit on the bench, I would rather spend the rest of the season at Notts County. Whereas if he does go down there and he doesn't play every week and perhaps he doesn't do well, then that, you might say, just properly kind of instates the fact that he's not going to be a Motherwell player for much longer, and he's not made it at the level as such, which is disappointing, because I thought he was a player with great potential. I was personally very pleased when they signed him permanently, but we played his fife in the League Cup last year, and I found his performance that night to be so sort of lackadaisical that he was disrespectful to East Fife. There was times he kind of just let that Nathan Austin striker go, as if to say, I don't need to mark him. I'm a top division player. He's a lower division player. There were times he looked as if he thought it should be a stroll when it wasn't. And I don't know if his Motherwell career's actually really recovered from that, because he get dropped the Saturday following that, and he certainly wasn't seen much at centre-half after that. So, yeah, that was just a disappointing one. You sign a guy who's got a bit of youth pedigree that Lang had, key caps with England at youth level. He's played a game with Sunderland's first team, and he's obviously been highly rated at Nottingham Forest to begin with and things. So it would be really disappointing to see us having signed him in a two-year contract and for it not to work out. But I guess some of these things work out, some don't.
Jay, I suppose it's all open to speculation just now as to reasons why he has been farmed out on loan, but the fact that he has been previously at Notts County and had a spell at the club before is possibly weighed into it. It could be the situation that he wants to move closer to home. Opportunities have been very limited at Fir Park through injury, through whatever reason, so I guess in the context of that, it does make a fair degree of sense.
Well, yeah, that's it. I mean, it's hard to kind of judge. I mean, again, the natural assumption, I suppose, when a player like Lang, who came in and was a first-team player, and who, you know, although a younger player, certainly isn't, you know, the kind of, you know, 18 years old type of age, then you kind of think, oh, well, his career's over, or we're looking to move him on. But a lot has been made by McGee and the club about how, for us to be able to do any more business, we need to try and get, you know, one or two players out. So, I mean, it could simply be that we have Kennedy, we have Lang. Nobody wants Kennedy, but Notts County are quite happy to take Lang and play him, you know, give him first team football. It could be as simple as that. It could be that McGee perhaps wants to keep one of them and hasn't quite made up his mind who it is. Maybe he wants to keep both of them long term. I'm really not sure. It might just be, you know, as fate has it, Notts County are happy to take him for 5 months. It's quite difficult to decide. I do agree with Joe. I think that Lang has a lot of potential. I think, you know, he seemed to sort of float about in positions and have a couple of good games, the odd mistake, as Joe says, without really, you know, going on a proper run of really good form. But then when I think he's going to get moved to right back, he did seem to start cementing his kind of, you know, getting a foothold in that position and starting to really look comfortable. And then, of course, you know, got injured and that, you know, unfortunately put an end to that. So if McGee presumably has seen the same as we've seen, I think, you know, the fact that McGee tried to put him at centre mid, which again, like Joe, I don't quite see myself, but I think it shows that McGee at least rates him as a footballer as well as a defender. So I would like to think that there's still a future for Louis Lang at Firth Park. I think that it could just be that McGee has identified, you know, perhaps the centre midfield. I still think that we need someone who can play a bit of football in there. Whether he sees Lucas as the answer to that, I'm not sure. But it could just be that somebody needs to go so that we can afford someone like that. And, you know, with all the will in the world, it could be that you want Kennedy to go out on loan, but if nobody wants Kennedy and Notts County are quite happy to give Louis Lang first team football, then perhaps the decision's been made that, you know, that benefits everybody involved.
Yeah, I suppose another factor could be the youth system, which obviously the team going on and winning the Youth Cup last year, there might be a few eyes on that side as well, and perhaps trying to breed in some of the younger guys into the first team in the same way that Ben Hall and Chris Cadden came in last season. We might see someone coming out of left field as well, I suppose.
Well, that, I mean, that's the thing. I think Ben Hall's a really good example of that. You know, although we don't go to masses of under-20s games, we've obviously seen bits and pieces. You see the highlights. We'll obviously be there tomorrow night for the Airdrie game. And you kind of think that you've got a good idea about who the next ones are coming through. That is pretty much a culture at most clubs, I think, that, you know, Steelman Online and other forums like that will have the pinpointed future stars. But Ben Hall was a really good example of someone who the manager, perhaps Craig and perhaps Stephen Robinson, you know, obviously saw something in him that wasn't, you know, out there. It wasn't something that everybody else was talking about, and it was a left field shout. I mean, I think a lot of people didn't even really know who Ben Hall was, and then suddenly he was, you know, one of the first names in the team sheet for centre half. So you're right. I mean, that kind of shows that all it takes is a player getting his chance or being thrown into the deep end to really grasp it. But we'll need to wait and see. Again, you know, the reasons behind Lang going out on loan could be literally anything. I mean, it could be that we're trying to move him on. It could be to get him first team football. It could be to free up a wage. It's really hard to tell. You know, McManus, of course, isn't getting any younger. So does McGee see either Kennedy or Lang as a long term replacement for McManus? Is there someone in the under-20s who could step in? It's one of those things where you just really need to wait it out. We'll all have an opinion. We'll all, you know, have different opinions on how good both Lang and Kennedy are, but it is one of those ones where it's just about waiting to see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And a quick mention, tomorrow night's game against Airdrie in the Ibrox Cup, Joe, I know that it's slightly strange circumstances for our under-20s side to be playing Airdrie's first team, but it's an intriguing prospect, one that I'm sure the guys involved tomorrow night will benefit from.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it'll be a good chance to see the likes of, I believe, Ferguson and Thomas are too old to play in it. I think they can play in league games with under-20s without being an over-age player, but in the Cup, you need to be they born the year after them. So it's a shame they won't be able to get a full run out. But, I mean, perhaps Edinburgh City, the game before, was maybe not as much of a challenge because they were a team at the time who were yet to play in the league, I think it was at the time. So they're just newly promoted to the league structure, whereas it'll be a good kind of marker for us to see guys like Luke Watt and Ross McLean, Alan Campbell, and see when faced with a proper senior team from League One who play competitively together every week, it'll be a good marker to see where these guys are and kind of give you more of an indication as to how close they are to the first team and which players we could maybe expect to see filling those gaps, as we were saying there.
And Jay, I know you weren't at the Edinburgh City game, but I can assure you it was played at a fairly fierce pace, and there was a few meaty tackles. You would expect the exact same tomorrow night, because Airdrie won't be coming to Firth Park with any intention of losing to Motherwell's youth side.
Well, that's it, exactly. I mean, it's an interesting prospect because I think it's easy to, you know, you're going to see the under-20s and it's kind of easy to forget that for Airdrie, this is, you know, a domestic competition that they'll want to you know, try and get a run at. You know, I mean, that's the Challenge Cup is there so that teams like Airdrie can get a wee bit of a cup run and possibly even go on and look to win it. I mean, it's not a friendly, it's not a, you know, a wee stroll in the park. It's a competitive game, and I don't know if Andy's offering odds on it, but I would have Airdrie down as quite considerable favourites for tomorrow night, regardless of, you know, the idea that they're League One. I think that this is a game that Airdrie should be favourites for, and I think it will take a really big effort from the under-20s to get a good result. It's certainly not out of the realms of possibility. We've saw them, you know, in, obviously in the cup final last season. They're a good side with some good players. It'll be really, really interesting to see, because it is a little bit of the step into the unknown, because normally your only real experience of guys in the under-20s coming up against sides like Airdrie are when, you know, your younger players go out on loan, and that can often be hit or miss. You know, you get the guys like Craig Moore, who goes out and does really well at Ayr, or Lee Irwin, I know, is still a big hit with our Arbroath fans. But yeah, you get one or two that also go out on loan and really fail quite considerably or aren't ready for it. So it'll be quite an interesting prospect tomorrow night to see, you know, just what we've got in the under-20s, because the one good thing, I must admit, I kind of turned my nose up a wee bit at the start of the Challenge Cup. I thought it was a wee bit of a daft, you know, over elaborate setup, and particularly inviting, you know, Northern Irish and Welsh teams and stuff. But in fairness, tomorrow night is a really, really interesting encounter, and it's the kind of challenge that these under 20 players aren't going to get. You know, it's not going to come along very often. So it'll be really, really interesting to see how they cope with it. Because as I said, for me, Airdrie should be favourites.
Well, guys, I think that's pretty much all we've got time for this week. We'll meet again next week. And Joe, you're becoming a bit of a regular. Thank you very much for this.
No problem. Glad to be on.
Jay, good to be back. Thanks for holding the fort last week. Much appreciated.
No worries. Cheers.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.